Welcome back to the Date Night Podcast. My name is Pastor Chad, and I am so thrilled that you are back with us today as we continue our series on how to fight fair in marriage. It's going to be a good one. I hope you enjoy.
We've been talking about this concept of how to fight fair in marriage. And so today what I want to do is I want to look at a couple of rules, a couple of guidelines that can help us as we navigate different moments of conflict or different moments of fighting. Now, if you think about it, we said this before, any game, any contest, anything of any merit that has some form of competition, it has rules, right? You think of the NFL, the NBA, hopscotch, UFC, like whatever you list, everything has some form of rules. Even UFC, which says no holds barred, there's still rules, right? Because you can't kill someone, at least on purpose, all right? It's deceiving sometimes when you watch it, I get it. But still, in everything there's rules. And so it's interesting that in marriage, though, you don't really hear a lot of, hey, one, two, three, here's some things you really got to be careful of when you're in the midst of a conflict. Now, some of us that have been more seasoned, maybe by default, you've come up with a few guidelines that you try to adhere to, especially in conflict. But for most of us, we've never actually sat down and said, hey, let's go over a few rules on how we can fight. It doesn't normally happen. And so really, that was the heartbeat of this whole time that we had together. And it kind of culminates into this moment here tonight. Now, some of us might say, you know, well, we just don't want to do that. We just don't want to fight. We don't want to have conflict. I don't want to play that game, right? Anybody, I don't want to play this game tonight? Well, the truth is, conflict is inevitable. And the reason it's inevitable, and I know I'm preaching to the choir on this topic, but the reason it's inevitable is because of the differences that we all have. But the differences aren't bad things. The differences are not actually even good things. They're God things. It's things that God gave you and I. Part of it's gender. We're created differently. Our brains all the way down through our bodies. Everything's different because there's differences. By default, you end up with conflict. Our personalities are different. The way we look at life, our history growing up, our childhoods were different. We've been shaped and formed different ways. And so all of these differences, they make us unique. They make us the people, the individual man and woman that we are. But sometimes they lead us into conflict and sometimes even into more conflict. And so it's important to remember that this is a good thing that God's given us, but because conflict is a non-negotiable in marriage, it's worth looking at how to handle it well. Now, the first thing we got to talk about is rooting this all in love, because ultimately that's the most important thing that we can do. Now, let me read this passage to you. You're familiar with this passage, but let me just read it to you. Some of you may have heard it at your wedding. 1 Corinthians 13 says this, love is patient, maybe you can finish it, and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Now, we've heard that before, right? How many of you that was read at your wedding? I'm just curious, just for fun. Yeah? Couple of you? Cool. So here's what's interesting. That verse, or that set of verses, was actually not written for marriage or for couples. It was written for the church. It was written for believers. When you gather together, this is how you treat each other. Now, don't be mad at your pastor. They didn't do anything wrong, or your officiant, whoever you hired. They didn't do anything wrong by reading that, because the truth is, by default, if we're believers, we are in the community, we are Christians, we are in the family, and so the same principles apply. But here's the interesting part. If we would have, and maybe some of us did, learn to do that while we were just with normal people, our friends, our family, the people we go to church with, this would have been a natural byproduct of how we lived our lives in marriage. But because for most of us, we were still growing up in this area. We were still learning how to love difficult people, how to deal with people that drove us crazy or people that were harsh or fill in the blank. Sometimes there's a learning curve. And so I think what's most important as we begin looking at rules is to remember that guidelines are great, but the foundation has to be love. And it's got to be the love we have for each other. By the way, that's God's gift to us. That marriage was this safe place that we could come, that we could bear literally everything of who we are to our spouse, knowing that because they love us, it's a safe place to be able to talk, to share, to agree, but also to disagree. So everything here is rooted in love, it truly is the foundation. Okay, so let's get into some of these rules or guidelines. If you don't like rules, just call it a guideline. If you don't like either of that, just call it a point. But whatever it is, hopefully you'll just absorb this and it'll be helpful. Also remember, this is not going to be an exhaustive list because I only get a few minutes to do this. But most importantly, I don't want to give you, hey, here's 13 things to think about while you're in the middle of a fight with your spouse. That's probably not going to be very helpful. Maybe for you detail people, you might actually appreciate that. But for your spouse, they're going to be going crazy. So what I did is I put it into three simple categories. And then inside the categories, there'll be a few helpful tips kind of along the way to give us our thought process. Here's the first one. Ready? Listen up. Don't look at your spouse at any point during this night either. Just absorb it all, okay? Do what point one says. Listen up. James 1:9 says this. Everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. James says, hey, respond tactfully and don't talk too much. Now let's be honest. Half of this room talks too much. Okay, I know that because you're the extroverts of the room. And I'm one of them, unfortunately, all right? We talk too much. James isn't saying don't talk at all. He's saying be tactful, be thoughtful. Because the truth is, listening is active, not passive. You ever thought about this? Listening is active, not passive. See, passive listening is actually you just hear. I heard what they said. Someone was talking. There was noise going. It bounced around in my head a little bit and it moved on. But active is that you are listening. Not only are you hearing, but you're processing, even responding. We call it reflexivity, that as they're talking to you, you have some body language, you have some nods. Oh, I hear you. Oh, wow, I didn't know you. Oh, I hear you. Oh my gosh, I didn't think you thought that way. I didn't hear. See, we're reflexive in our thought process because we're not just hearing someone wash over us a bunch of stuff we're not interested in, right? We actually are listening to what they're saying. So we're being active. So listening is active, not passive. And the truth is it requires a lot of energy, a lot of focus. And at times it requires a lot of endurance. And the truth is those are the three things that all of us probably have the least of. Right? We're tired from work and school and kids and business and all the stuff that's going on. We've got no energy. Our focus is all over the place because we're constantly distracted, right? We're just a distracted people in general in this country. And then endurance, I mean, there's a lot of other things we'd like to put our attention and our endurance to, right? Like watching a really long football game over and over and over again all day long. You're welcome, wives. All right? But the truth is, since these are in short supply, this takes a lot of work. That we've got to lean in and listen up so that we can actually hear and respond to what our spouse is saying. The other thing we have to be careful of, and for those of you that are like me and you like to talk, you have to be careful that as you're listening to your spouse, you're not just waiting for the next moment when you get to talk. You know what I'm talking about? Like you're going, oh, that's good, but I can't wait to hear. Are you done yet? Okay. Oh, great, but listen, I have something to, right? We're waiting for that one moment when they just take a breath so we can insert our most valuable wisdom and information that we can share. And the truth is, that's where we find ourselves in trouble. So when we talk about listening up, we must be prepared to know that it takes some time and some energy. Also, we have to learn to listen for the things that are not being said. But to listen to things not being said. So this is interesting. If you look at cultures just kind of across the world, use the example of Americans versus the Japanese culture. So in American culture, we have what we call low context relationships. Okay, there's an official term, low context relationships. The idea is we mean what we say and we say what we mean. So there's no other context really needed. You don't need to always look at body language and all of that because we're just going to say it. An example, a Japanese culture, they are going to use indirect wording, body language to tell what they're saying because it comes across as rude if you're that direct or that blunt. Have you ever noticed that Americans can be rude? This is part of that challenge that we face. It's a cultural thing. So here's an example. Let's say that a group of people walk into a meeting and the door remains open when everyone walks in. In American culture, you would look at the door and you would say, hey, can you go ahead and close that door? Just direct, straight to the point, mean what you say what I mean. But in a Japanese culture, this is an illustration that I found that I thought was helpful. They would say, ooh, it would be nice if that door was closed right now. Now, some of you already are like, are you kidding me? My wife talks about like that, that passive aggressive. No. But what they're saying is they're trying to be polite by not being too direct. But in America, we don't understand that as much. Well, here's the thing. In our relationships, we tend to have high and low groups within our marriages. That you have one that's going to say what they mean and mean what they say, and you have another that's going to use a little bit more nonverbal communication. They're going to use a little bit more indirect wording. And you have to understand how your spouse is, because the truth is, the high context people can be mortally offended when you're that direct or you're that quick with them. You're that swift with them because they take it as if you're being rude. We have to understand who we're looking across. And on that note, nonverbal communication is such a big part of our conversation, is it not? Don't you love it when you're talking to someone and they're doing this on their phone? Like, doesn't that feel so good? You're telling your life story and like, oh yeah, that's so good. Oh yeah, so good. Oh, just so good, right? The young guys, it's like this. Old people, it's like this. But anyways, like, I get it. Really good. Keep sharing. I'm so interested, right? It doesn't feel good. Because the truth is, our nonverbal communication can be just as important as our physical. Now, let's do a test. Okay, here's what I want you. Everyone look at their spouse right now, really quick. Look at your spouse. I want you to look dead in their eyes, okay? Whoever's calling me, it's not going to work out. All right, look them dead in the eyes. I want you to look directly into the eyes of your spouse for 1 minute. Don't say a word. You can smile, but don't say anything, and do not look away. Whatever you do, you can blink. That's okay to blink, but whatever you do, don't look away, okay? Red Room 2, y'all do this. Everybody look in the eyes of your spouse for 1 minute. Go, don't say a word. Don't speak. 1 minute. If your spouse is not here, it's awkward that you're looking at me. Keep going. Good news is you're halfway there. Keep looking. It's okay to smile for those of you that are frowning, even if you had a bad day. A little smile is okay. All right, stop. Look at me. How was that? Some of you are like, breathe. I need water. Why are there only 4 bottles on the table? Isn't it amazing how difficult that was? Some of you are like, no big deal. And others of you are like, things are getting hot, man. I'm glad we stopped that. Anyways, sorry, just kidding. Here's the thing. Because that's so difficult for most of us, it reminds us that by default, we're probably not very good at nonverbal communication because we don't practice it regularly. Right? And we had a hard time putting our eyes together, but think about how phones have played a place in that. Think about how TV and iPads and all the things, there's so many things that get in the way. And so when we're communicating, sometimes we're lazy, and I'm talking about myself, lazy with how our nonverbal communication is connecting with our verbal communication. And that's a really important point. In fact, it's interesting to know that silence is actually a wonderful thing. Have you ever thought about that? Don't look at your spouse right now. This is not the time for it. Silence can actually be a wonderful thing. Sometimes what happens, we get started in a conversation and in our mind we're thinking, I don't want to talk about this right now, or I have too much going on. I can't. If you're a guy, it's really easy to understand this because we typically can only think about one thing at a time. And so when someone wants to start a conversation and you can't focus, you go, that's great. And if they were to ask you, what did I just say, you would have no idea, right? So our natural response is just kind of, But the truth is, if we just said, hey, can you just give me 1 minute? Like, I just need a minute. Whether it's a minute to process, maybe it's a minute to stop doing what I'm doing, but I just need a minute because I actually want to listen up. Now look at this. Here's 6 reasons why, how silence can actually be super helpful for us. Look at the, I'm going to do these just quickly. It makes room for listening. All right, that's a good thing, right? When we're silent, we create space so that we can listen. Here's the next one. It gives us freedom to observe. Here comes that nonverbal communication, the body language. You're observing. It allows us time to think. How many of you are quick to speak and then you say something and then your spouse goes, are you kidding me? Why did you just say that to me? And you're like, well, I didn't mean it that way because I didn't think about it. I just said it, right? It provides space in which to feel. And we move in a culture, we're moving so fast that emotions can easily be left behind because we're just moving on to the next thing. It lets us, number five, broaden our awareness. And then number six, it opens us to the entry of peace. And so a little tip, if you're in a conflict that's getting a little out of hand, maybe silence, maybe some separation might be good, but maybe it's just a couple moments of silence, maybe even looking into each other's eyes to create a sense of calmness, of focus, and of attention to then begin the dialogue. So what all this tells us is listening up is such an important part. It's such an important rule, guideline for us when we're in the midst of conflict. Now let's move to number two. These will be a little bit quicker. Now we're going to speak up. So we listened up. Now we're going to speak up. It's been said that the tongue is the deadliest blunt instrument on the earth. Now that may be debatable, but we all know the tongue can slice. In fact, Proverbs confirms this with us. Proverbs 18:21, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Have we all experienced that at least once in our life? Probably to us and to someone else, right? That's how quick it is. And the truth is, we know that we need to speak up. We know that conflict won't be resolved if one person just sits there and takes it all in while the other one talks. There has to be communication. The key is how we do that. The key is how we have that conversation. So let's think of these couple things. One, we want to be a few words. We want to avoid rash, harsh, belittling words toward each other. Belittling words have been coming up a lot recently in our time together. We want to avoid those kinds of words. Typically, when we speak less, we help to protect ourselves from doing that. But we also, if we use too many words, we find ourselves in trouble. Another passage, when there are many words, transgression is unavoidable, but he who strains his lips or she is wise. Now, this isn't saying you don't speak. It's just saying that you're slow. You think, you process, you think before you speak. Sarah used to do something when she was teaching. She'd use this little illustration where we just didn't have time for it tonight, but she'd bring two people up. She'd put a toothpaste in front of them. Remember doing this? The toothpaste bottle. And she'd give them each one. She'd go, okay, as fast as you can, empty out the toothpaste. And so, you know, they're going crazy, dumping the toothpaste in the tray. And then she goes, okay, but that's not the game. Now the game is, how fast can you get the toothpaste back in the tube? You get it? Try it at home when you get home, if you can't figure it. Right? You can't get it back in. Because once it's out, it's out. It's the same thing for us. So, of course, we have to speak so that we can deal with conflict. But how we say it and what we say is so important. So if we are of fewer words, typically we're going to be wiser in our words. But then the second part of this is sometimes we're going to have to repeat ourselves. So something you may notice as you've been listening to me talk, I'm an extrovert. So extroverts talk really fast. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, I tend to talk a little slow, but extroverts talk really fast. And sometimes for all of us extroverts in the room, because we talk so fast, it can be really difficult to understand what someone is saying. And I have this happen to me all the time. And I get really frustrated. Just say, are you kidding me? Let me say it again, exactly the way I did. But the truth is, because of just the way that I'm wired, I speak and I think so quickly that sometimes those dots don't connect. But then what happens? I get frustrated at the person I'm talking to instead of realizing that the problem was me. I needed to remember that if I'm going to speak up, I have to think about the challenges that I face. My challenges, I'm going to speak, especially if I'm getting passionate about something, you may have noticed, I'm going to speak really, really fast. It may be complicated because it's coming at you so quickly. And so when I'm in any kind of conflict, especially with Sarah, I have to be so careful that what I say, though I thought it was crystal clear, she may not have heard it that way. And I have to step back and guess what? Re-say it. But not in a sarcastic way, slow like a child, so she hears it. No, I have to re-say it in a way that she can understand it. And I'm going to be honest. We've had moments where that hasn't always happened because I'm like, are you kidding me? I just said it. I'll say it again, just like, and I'm just being a jerk. See, the difference is I recognize she didn't hear me. if she didn't understand me, I've got to fix that. If I'm going to speak up, sometimes you and I are going to have to say it again. But always we're going to have to remember that we speak to heal, not to wound. We speak to heal, not to wound. And that's really the baseline of this whole conflict within marriage. Everything we do is to try to get to a resolution, to try to get to some healing, not to cause more wounds. And all of us can identify and say, yeah, I've been not very good at that at times. Right? I said things that were way more harmful than helpful. I said things that caused us more separation rather than coming together to come to a resolution. And because of that, we had problems. The truth is, words are so powerful and they can be so deadly. And so often we hear how dangerous they are. But on the other side, they can be so healing. How great is it when someone walks up to you and just gives you a compliment that you didn't see coming? How great is it when someone says to you how much they appreciate you or something that you've done for them or with them? See, as hard as words can be, they're also so great. I think about if you were to take a knife, right? It's a little gruesome, but if you take a knife, right, you could cut or stab someone. Obviously, that's mean, rude. Don't ever do that. But the other side is you could take that same knife and put it in the hand of a surgeon, and he or she could cut and slice away, but that cutting and slicing leads to healing, not to more harm. And so that's the kind of power we have with our words. So if we're going to speak up, we want to be a few words. We want to be careful that we repeat if necessary and we do it kindly. But then we also want to remember that we are here to speak words that heal, not wound. And so I want to practice this really quick. I want everybody to close your eyes for just a moment. Close your eyes just for one quick moment. All right, I want you to picture your spouse. Okay, now I want you to think of just one word or one small sentence you could say to them that could encourage them, remind them how much you admire them, but something positive. Just take just a second here, think about that. I want something that would remind them how much you admire them, encourage them, appreciate them. Just think of one word or one little phrase really quick. Okay, now turn to your spouse and say it to them. Okay, 5 seconds, so be quick. All right, how did that feel? Some of you are like, it felt staged, bro. It wasn't very real. Well, good, you can practice again when you get home or in the car. But here's the funny thing. Even for those of us that may have had that first thought, oh my gosh, this is so staged, it still felt good. You can deny it all you want, but it still felt good. Because all of us enjoy hearing. And you know what? The truth is, that's the gift God gave us in spouses. That we're here to help each other be better, but we're also here to love each other, to encourage each other, and to walk with each other, even if no one else cares. That's the beauty of a marriage. Here's the last little thought. And it's, we're gonna listen up, we're gonna speak up, and then we're gonna pass the dice. You ever played a game where you're rolling dice, right? At some point, hopefully not an illegal gambling game, of course, but at some point, you got to pass the dice because it's not your turn the whole game, right? But every game you play, at some point, you're going to pass the dice. And the idea is this, hey, you're going to say what you're going to say. You're going to listen carefully, and then you're going to hand it back over so that you can listen, and you're going to keep moving around the circle until you finally reach a point where you come to that resolution. And if it started with a comment, then it turns into a speech that then turns into a lecture that then turns into some filibuster, right? That's never good, all right? And you went way too long. You weren't wise with your words. You weren't tactful with your words. And I promise you, your spouse stopped listening back when it became a speech or even a lecture. So the reality is we want to recognize that. And we want to do this carefully. So we pass the dice. In fact, in the old days, if you remember, before I was born, just kidding, they had these things called radios. I'm just kidding, that was a joke, sorry. They had radios, and when they would end a transmission, what would they say? Paige, what would they say? You know, you use radios now, still today. What would they say? Put you on the spot. Over. They say over, right? Remember this? You'd say your phrase, you use a walkie-talkie every day. Anyway, Paige works here. All right, so you say over, and it was the sign that my communication is done. I'm transferring back to you so that you can finish. And maybe some of us, as silly as it might sound, might need to insert over into our communication. Because some of us are going, is he still going? He's still going. I'm falling asleep. Are you done yet? Oh, wait, was that my time to talk? If I don't talk, what happens now? Right? So a simple adjustment like, hey, okay, let me hear what you think. Did that make sense what I'm saying? Or if you want to have fun with it, just say over is good. Okay, so let me bring this home really quick. I want to say this. You know, life is not safe. If you've noticed that, if you just look around, watch the news, walk outside, somebody's probably stubbed their toe tonight, and you'd be like, that's what he was talking about. But the truth is, life isn't safe. But in our marriages, the love we have with each other is what gives us a sense of safety. And it does keep us safe. It does hold us up. And that's so important. And so I think what happens when we're in conflict is it's so easy to let that be what slides out of the way so that we can just get to the end. I want to say what I wanted to say. I want to make sure you heard me. And you'll notice what we talked about. These things are not revolutionary tonight, but they sure do help us kind of set a gauge and a guide for us. If we could stay within this path, we could sure love each other better. And hey, our conflicts, though we may get a little heated at times because we're passionate, we care, we will get to a resolution. And we get to a resolution, we grew. Right? That's how we grow in marriage, is we finally work our way to a point where we got to a resolution and that is no longer a problem. That's behind us and we're ready for the next thing, because unfortunately conflict doesn't go anywhere. But if we can keep ourselves rooted in love and protect each other in that way, and if I could just leave you with this little thought, is to try to celebrate the little wins, because we could study this for 10 weeks together, we're still going to have challenges. So we focus on one little thing at a time. Some of us have been married a long time. Others of us have been married just a little while. We celebrate the little wins, but we work toward the big ones. We celebrate the little conflicts that we handled well to prepare for the big conflicts that may be coming soon. But at the end of the day, man, if we could learn to fight or have conflict fair, our marriages not only got healthier, but they got stronger. We got wiser as individuals, and we got wiser as a family. And so for some of you, you're going, man, can't wait to get home because we got some conflicts we're about to deal with. It started by the way he was looking at me in the eyes, right? But some of us, we're thinking, man, things are good, and that's wonderful. And maybe we hang on to these for when that time comes so that we can be ready. And if I could just add one little caveat that I wasn't going to say, make sure that you have extra patience with each other, okay? Don't drop this on them and be like, well, Chad said you're supposed to listen up. So listen, buddy. Don't do that kind of stuff. Understand that it's going to be a work in progress. For some of us, this isn't as big of an area, but for others of us, this really is. And so work together and have patience with each other. We keep love as the foundation, and I think we're going to be okay.